Before we get started, I'm going to make one more announcement. All of this art that you see on the outside here that we've had all summer, that is going to be available to you if you'd like to have one of those pieces next Sunday. And for $25 to replenish the pool of resources to get something new for there, if for $25 you can have any of these pieces of art. So if you're interested in that, you can... Oh, not the easels, just the art. But if you want it, you can come see me next week, and we'll make that happen for you. Mark kind of shared a little bit about what we want to say this morning. I think the thing that I want you to know is we're going to try to be super honest this morning, maybe even uncomfortably honest for us about junk in our life that we've been through, in hopes that maybe it will be helpful to you. Maybe you'll get one thing this morning and say, well, that was helpful to me. It's sometimes hard to admit when you failed. And we failed more than once. And you'll hear about that this morning. And so we're going to try to be super authentic this morning with you and tell you how it really is, not how it might be. I've been in leadership in churches now for almost 40 years. And what I can tell you about churches often is that churches are about the perfect first marriage family. So if your marriage is messed up, or you've been married more than once, or you're a single parent, it's like, yeah, well, we welcome you, but you're kind of not the main thing. And so sometimes if you've gone through those kinds of struggles, it can make you feel like you're... What? Did you turn your mic on? Turn it on. That way you can say something and they can hear you. She said second class. It can make you feel like you're second class. So can we have our graphic up on the screen, Jonathan? Yeah. So what does this all mean up on the screen here? It means that Pam and I have been married twice, which means we're, of course, now married to each other, but we were both married before. And whether you can believe it or not, Pam was married 17 years the first time, and next month we'll have been married 33 years. That means Pam, as young as she is, has been married a total of 50 years. Now, some of you can't even grasp 50 because you're not even that old, and it seems like, how could anyone have been married that long? I promise you she has been. And I was married 7 years the first time, and now, of course, 33, so I've been married a total of 40 years. So I want to just tell you this morning a quick thing about our family so that it makes sense to you in terms of how that all works. We talk about our kids as our kids. In reality, Pam has two. We have a daughter that lives in Alaska who's 51, and we have a son that lives in California who's 48. And we have a son, my son, who's 39, and he lives up the road in Cleveland. And then we have four grandkids, a grandson, 14, and we have granddaughters, 12, 7, and 4. So hopefully what we share this morning can be helpful to you. We want to talk about three things. We want to talk about why our marriage failed the first time, because sometimes people don't really own that. They're just like, yeah, it didn't work out. Let's move on. I think it's helpful to know why your marriage failed, so we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about what it was like to be single parents, which we both have been, and then what it's like to bring a blended family together. Before we dive into that, many of you know I'm a reader, so I'm going to recommend another book to you this morning. This book is called From Broken Boy to Mended Man. The subtitle is A Positive Plan to Heal Your Childhood Wounds and Break the Cycle. Now, this book is written for men, but this book applies to anybody. And here's what I want to tell you about this book this morning. It is amazingly insightful to understand what is going on in your life as a result of the kind of parents you had, and then to realize what might be going on in the lives of your children because of the kind of parent you are. So for that alone, and there's way more than that, for that alone, I'd recommend that book. So I'm going to go first, and we're going to go back and forth as we share. I'm going to share real quickly three reasons why my first marriage failed. Primarily, it failed because we were never able to resolve conflict. We had three different types of conflict. The first one was over our pace of life. I wanted to be busy. I wanted to get things done. My first wife was a procrastinator and had a hard time getting around to things, and she didn't like it that I wanted to get things done, and I didn't like it that she never got things done or didn't had a hard time getting to it, and we couldn't seem to resolve that. We had a conflict over money. I'm sure no one else in this room has ever had that conflict, but we did. And I was okay with making enough money to pay the bills and to put away some savings. And she always said to me, now she was a stay-at-home mom, and I was the one that was working, but she would say to me, like, you need to make more money. I said, I'm making as much money as I can right now. Well, you need to make more because we need to have nicer stuff. And we couldn't seem to resolve that. And then last, we had conflict over communication, and this was probably the biggest one. If she had issues with me, then she would go talk to her mom and dad about it instead of talking to me. And then she would have her mom and dad tell her what I ought to do to fix myself. And then she would come say, my mom and dad think you need to do this to get your life together. That wasn't a real happy thing for me. So we didn't work over some of those kinds of conflicts. So we decided to go to counseling. Maybe some of you have been to counseling. She wanted to talk about all the things that were wrong with me. I said, okay, I know there are things that are wrong with me because I'm part of the problem. And then the counselor said to her, okay, but we need to talk about some of the things that are wrong with you too. And she's like, well, there's nothing wrong with me. And that was the end of the counseling. So I want you to know it takes two people to make a marriage work, right? If one person wants to make it work and the other person doesn't want to make it work, it doesn't work. It takes both people to want to make it work. This is not easy for me like normal when I share Bible teaching. This is my stuff. One night I came home and all my wife's things were gone and there was a note in the closet. I swear I can see it just like it was yesterday. And the note said, I don't love you and I don't want to be married to you. And I'm out of here. And all her stuff was gone, and so was my two-year-old. It was a real hard day. It was some time before I discovered that she had been involved with someone else even while we were married and even while we were living together. And the most painful thing is I was friends with her brother and sister and her mom and dad long before I ever knew her. I met her last. And everyone else in the family knew that she was with this guy, and no one told me. I so felt a sense of betrayal. She had been planning to leave for a long time and was waiting till she could afford to live on her own. So she filed for divorce, and as soon as it was done, they got married immediately. I just have to say, I was really angry. I don't know if you've ever had someone cheat on you, but it's not a good thing. So I made an important decision back then, and that was to honor our vows, even if she didn't. And I want to say, looking back now, that was a super important decision that I made. I didn't always make the right decisions, but that was a right one. And I'll tell you why, because over the years, that relationship has healed, and now we're friends again. And she and her husband and their kids have been in our house multiple times. Welcome in our house multiple times. Things can get restored, you guys. It doesn't have to be where it's ugly and there can never be relationship again. So now I'm going to turn it over to Pam, and she's going to tell you her story.
Okay. Mine's a little more complicated, but here it goes. At 17, I had an unplanned pregnancy, which was emotional to grasp, but then I had to tell my parents. And on top of that, I announced very clearly that I wanted to keep the baby, of which their response was, let's get an abortion so we can be done with this. Well, obviously that didn't happen, but my relationship with my husband started off rocky, as my parents' pressure does to get married quickly, and within a week we were married at their house. And it wasn't our decision. It's not something we wanted to do, but we just kind of went with the flow. It was an uphill battle, having to prove to everyone that at 17, you can be a grown-up. 3 years later, we settled into the San Francisco Bay Area, now with two kids and hoping forward to have a new fresh start. When my kids were about 1 and 2 and a half, I became a Christian and everything changed. For my husband, the whole God thing was totally against his atheist beliefs that he had growing up in his family. That decision became the basis of the most difficult challenges I had faced yet. He ridiculed my newfound belief, but he did allow me and the kids to attend and be involved in a local church. When my kids were in high school, he was arrested and charged with the molest of one of our daughter's friends. He was released, and the charges were eventually dismissed by the court. But the police department had me come in and read the report, which stated that he had a gun and was planning to use that on me. So I no longer felt safe. I got a restraining order to protect me and my kids because he was out of the house at that point. And because that was the final straw, with everything over the past years, I filed for divorce. I had no idea at that time how much more I was going to discover. Unfortunately, I had little financial help. I lost friends. I was told by his family to never contact them again. And this led to another difficult season I had to face. I had many hours of praying, saying, "Help, please." You can play the video at this point. This season is called
When Single Parent Life. Of the goodness of God. I love your voice. You have led me through the fire. In darkest night, you are close like no other. I've known you as a father. I've known you as a friend. And I have lived in the goodness. So the goodness of God.
Boy, that I saw that video last night and I thought, boy, that kind of says it all. I was in that place many times, counting my pennies and trying to get a few gallons of gas. That's the life of a single mom. So life as a single parent came with many hardships. My daughter, she was the high school party girl. She didn't have much respect for the house or discipline. She was determined to push my limits. John laughed when he saw that I always had something in the trunk of my car that belonged to her, like her boombox, her stereo, her pager. Now, you all probably know what those things are, but this was the 90s, and if you're young, ask your parents what those things are. Or I had to take off her bedroom door because she had slammed it too many times, too hard, for a day or two, or staying out way past curfew. My son tried to keep the peace for everyone, but he hated to be in the middle, and he hated the household crisis, and he hated what his dad did to his family. There were times, a couple times, when I got a call from work from a neighbor because my kids were fighting in the front yard and having it out, which meant because I was the only parent, I had to take time off and come home and deal with it, or calling and say my son and his friends were up on the roof outside doing whatever, and that meant more hours of losing money and work. I worked at a retail job at Macy's for $7 an hour, barely making a dent towards mortgage, attorney, and household bills. Bills were paid once a month when I laid them all out on the living room floor and decided what was the most behind while others had to wait another month. Sadly, I did not qualify for food stamps because I was a homeowner. There was never enough money. We always ate cheap. We had Top Ramen, peanut butter and jelly sandwich, cereals, and milk. But the worst day came when I had to leave my car that broke down at the gas station during work. When I returned, they towed my car and said, oops, sorry, at the station, and the money I had to pay for bills that month had to get my car out of hock. I used my last dollars for a couple grocery items, a gallon of milk, which exploded on the floor of the garage door when I got home. I thought that was it. But lastly, there was a knock on the door, and when I opened the door, there was two FBI agents who had federal warrants for their dad's arrest. I realized at that point, I was married to someone who lived a double life of big time crime. He drained our kids' savings accounts and my savings account. He had my car stolen. And if you were thinking I had child support, no, there was no child support. By the way, just as a side note, not all, but many dads in a divorce situation do not ever pay child support. So that makes it a real burden on the mom. He fled to Florida, and within a year, he passed away at age 41. So it was time for a change. I co-founded a nonprofit ministry. I quit my retail job. My kids graduated. I had to file bankruptcy due to about 60 or so fraudulent accounts with no way to pay them off against my name. And I began to crawl out of a hill. But yeah, it took a long time.
So I was a single dad from the time my son was age 2 to 6. I've always been super committed to my son and wanted to be the best father I could be. After his mom left, I made a lot of sacrifices to invest in my relationship with my son. I went back to school to get another degree. I changed jobs. I sold my house and moved. I changed churches. I adjusted my entire life and schedule so that I could still be in my son's life. We had shared custody in the beginning. He lived with her and spent lots of time with me, nights and weekends. I remember I worked 45 minutes away from where she had moved, and I'd go to work, and I'd drive the 45 minutes through commute traffic, and I would get there, and I would pick him up, and we would go to the park and spend an hour at the park, and then I would go to school till 10:30 at night. And then I would drive 45 minutes back home, and then I would get up and drive 45 minutes in the morning to work. And my life went like that, week after week after week, because I was absolutely determined, no matter what decision she had made, I was going to be in my son's life. Like I said before, when we were married, she had been a stay-at-home mom and I had worked. And now I worked and had to raise a son. Because of the experience I've been through and because I understand what it's like, I probably have zero patience for you if you dads have your kid for the weekend and you whine and bitch and complain about it. You should be lucky that you get that time with your kids. Sorry if that one word offended you. I didn't mean to. I'm just being real this morning. So I had to learn to do a whole lot of stuff that his mom did because she was a stay-at-home mom, right? Okay, I have an amazing cook for a wife. Honestly, I had an amazing cook for a wife the first time. Do I cook? Well, if I have to, and I don't do a very good job of it. So now I got a 2-year-old. I got to learn to feed this kid, and he's with me at least half the time, right? And I have to learn to do all the other things that often moms do that husbands don't. And it was just a real transitional time. And here's something I want to say that I totally get about single parenting. If you're a single parent, the first thing you have to own is, I cannot do this alone. I don't care. You're not super mom or super dad. You cannot do it alone. You have to build a support system around you so that when you need help, it's there for you. If you don't, you will not make it. Increasingly, he spent more and more time with me. And so I still have a hard time getting my head around this, but his mom would call me up and she would say, you need to quit spending so much time with him. It doesn't work for me. And I go, what do you mean it doesn't work for me? It's unhealthy, the amount of time you spend with him. I don't have that kind of time to spend with him. And I was like, wait a minute. You're married. You have a husband and there's you. I just have me and you're whining and complaining because I spend too much time with our son. I'm sorry, but for me, it comes down to priorities, and he was a priority. When I moved, my new neighbor invited me to visit her church, and they had a really cool group called Kindred Spirits, was a small group just for single families. And that was where I met Pam. She was a part of that group. She was running a countywide outreach ministry, and I was working with churches, and we became friends and spent lots of time sharing our hopes and dreams. We walked miles and miles and miles just talking about what we really wanted out of life. And eventually I went to work for the same community ministry. It was during that time that our relationship grew, and eventually I proposed and we got married. I should probably mention, because this was it was a thing. I didn't realize it was a thing at the time, but it was definitely a thing. When we got married, my son was 6 and her kids were 15 and 18. And it was like being kind of a young dad trying to figure out how to be a parent, and all of a sudden I had a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old in the house, and they weren't all that excited that I was there. So that kind of got us started on the whole blended family thing, and I'm going to pass it back to Pam. She can talk about some of that.
Well, during my first marriage, my folks had reservations about my husband, but they gave him the benefit of the doubt. When we purchased a house, my parents offered the down payment if they could have half ownership of the house. I don't recommend that. But they offered to keep control and protection of the house for me and the kids to have just in case. It took years for John to be accepted by my parents, but eventually after 8 years, he was invited to come with me for a visit when I went back home. Just a little kind of funny side note. When John and I sold my house, because of the concerns about my second marriage, my folks, when it sold, they took their profit, their half, and somehow they managed to take mine. I don't know why, but they did. So when my dad passed, my sister and I found a box in the bottom of a chest freezer at my mom's house. When my sister asked about it, my mom decided to come clean and said it had my profit from the house in tens and $20 bills, $50,000, frozen solid in the bottom of a chest freezer. Sorry.
Doesn't everybody have that kind of stuff in the bottom of a freezer?
Our fear was that it was the freezer was probably about 50 years old, and thank goodness it was never everything dumped out and sold or taken to the dump. But anyway, it was an interesting time. Scott was protective of me and cautious about John, which he was probably more his struggles was towards his dad. Aaron, John's son, like I said, had just turned 6 when we got married and was too young to understand what a new marriage meant. He and my kids were 10 and 12 years apart, so there was not a lot of connection between the two. 6-year-olds are typically stubborn and picky by nature, so the day-to-day was hard, not only hard for me, but hard for our relationship. Only his mom could make spaghetti or pack school lunches right. Only his mom or dad could correctly tie his shoes. Only his dad could get him up for school or church. I remember a story when Scott and Aaron, they came home from school, and Scott had a poster board project, and he put it on the counter. Aaron grabbed a handful of markers, and while sitting on the bar stool, spun around and just dotted the whole room with the markers, including Scott's poster board project for school. Since the project had to be due the next day, there was no time to redo it. It also took a number of days to clean all the magic marker dots from all over the kitchen and the family room. I was pretty mad, and I sent him to the room, one of those, just wait till your dad gets home. When we got married, I really thought, because John and I were both Christians, that our blended family would be work or have its moments, but it really was much harder than what I expected. It was certainly not a Hallmark movie or the Brady Bunch. I didn't do everything right. Sometimes I did a lot right, and sometimes it was just figuring out the best at the moment with a lot of prayer. You're on.
So we went on our honeymoon after we got married. That's a good thing, right? You went on your honeymoon, you had a good time, and we got back, and I had just finished redoing the backyard because we got married and then had our reception at the house. And so we had a deck, and we had lattice on one side of the deck. And I got home, and I said to Pam, something's wrong with the lattice on the deck. It's like one section is brand new, and it doesn't even match the other sections, right? Bet you can guess what happened. Our son decided to have a few friends over, and a few friends invited a few friends. And pretty soon there was a giant party, and the police showed up, and somebody threw somebody through the lattice, and they had to replace the lattice, and they weren't even with it enough to figure out it would be a good idea to replace it with the same kind of lattice so maybe we wouldn't notice. So, you know, stuff like that happens, and then I had to figure out, okay, well, do I say something? It's not really my kid. Does Pam say something? And, you know, those are the kind of challenges that we faced right away. I want to talk about two main struggles that I feel like I had to deal with as a blended family. The first one was my son's mom. Look, when you're not married anymore, or you're not living with your child's parent, you still have to figure stuff out. I don't care if you decide you're never having anything to do with each other again. You're still, whether you want to or not, going to have some level of getting along because of your kids. And if you don't, your kids just suffer more. So she kept claiming that he was so young when she left that it wouldn't affect him in the long term. I wish that were true, but it just wasn't. Even at 2, he was struggling. He, like most kids, was angry that his mom and I didn't get back together. Now, I would have tried to do that if that was possible. But remember what I said? The moment the divorce was final, she was at the courthouse getting married. So that wasn't going to happen. Fortunately, he got along great with his stepdad. Now, I can tell you that he's a great guy. I didn't like him in the beginning at all. But he's a good guy, and he's like almost the total opposite of me. Things I like are not him, and definitely he's not me, right? But the good part of that is my son got two men in his life that gave him very different good things. So that was the good thing. But that didn't change the fact that my son was really angry at his mom, because she's the one that broke up the marriage, and she's the one that ended up marrying the other guy, right? So he was also angry, not just about us not being married, but he was angry because he wanted his mom to pay attention to him, and she wasn't doing it. She was spending time with her new husband and doing other things, and then they had two kids, so he was one of three, and he just had a lot of anger in him. It got to the point that I finally had to say to her, we have got to go to counseling. Now, remember how it went last time she and I went to counseling? You know, didn't end so well. I said, we got to go to counseling for our son's sake, because he's so angry and he's got so many issues that this can't continue the way it is. So we went to counseling, and finally, after a couple of sessions, she finally said to him, Aaron, I'm sorry that I divorced your dad, and I want to ask your forgiveness. Okay, that's a great thing, except you're talking to an 8-year-old. Do you think an 8-year-old really understands when a parent says, I'm sorry, and all the complications of that, and all the implications of that? I'm going to tell you, it took years. I'm just getting tired of sitting. It took years before my son could finally say, I forgive you, Mom. So that was nonsense, that stuff about he was only two when she left, it wasn't going to affect him over the long haul. It just wasn't, she thought. So the other thing I want to talk about is how my son took out his anger at Pam. I'm just going to say right up, what I want to share here is a total lose-lose situation. We talk about win-win. I wish we could have had a win-win. So here's my lose-lose situation. First of all, every time my son got mad, I had to figure out, well, are you mad at Mom or are you mad at Pam? Now, he didn't really know, and I wasn't sure I always knew. And then when he and Pam got into conflicts, I had to figure out, okay, now, whose fault is it really here? Is it my son's fault because he did something, or is it my wife's fault because no one does it right all the time? I don't, she didn't, he didn't. So then I'm always trying to think, okay, do I support my son here because actually he's right on this one, but then my wife's mad at me? Or do I support my wife and then my son is mad at me? It was a lose-lose situation. And we battled that for years and years and years. And all I ever felt like was I was stuck in the middle. And it was a hard thing. And do I have a perfect answer how to solve that in a blended family? Oh, I wish I did. I wish I did, but I don't. And it was really hard to try to get beyond that. When we moved to Chattanooga in 1999, his mom had moved to Idaho. And we moved here, and he decided he wanted to come live with us for his high school years. Looking back, I'm not sure why he decided us instead of his mom. I'm not sure if that was the right decision or not, but it's what happened. Somewhere along the way, he decided Pam was the wicked stepmother. Okay, you think that's like fairy tale stuff? It's not fairy tale stuff. He decided she was the wicked stepmother, so now I lived with the wicked stepmother and my son trying to deal with each other and me in the middle of it all the time. And the older he got, the worse he got. Because you know, the older they get, they think the parents don't know anything, right? The parents don't know anything. Anything. Okay, all of you young people in here, all of you who are teenagers who think your parents don't know anything, just wait a few years. You're going to find out that's not true. Okay? But you think it is now. My son was there. And so we had to deal with all of that. And so he decided okay, I'm going to graduate from school and I'm going to do what I should have done before. I'm going to go live with my mom. Okay, so I drove him to Idaho where he could live with his mom. That lasted 1 year. He came home extremely disappointed because all his fantasy about how great it was going to be living with his mom didn't pan out that way. And so then I'm going to finish with this part about stepfamilies. Then I had a new problem. He was so angry at us, and now he was so angry at his mom that he made a decision back then. I'm convinced this is when he made that decision. And sadly, he still feels this way today. He said, I will never have a marriage like you or your mom. Ever, 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 ever. And so today, he has all kinds of anger issues with him, with his mom, and with me, because we didn't do it right when we were a kid. One of the reasons I recommended this book is, listen, you and I have junk in our life from the way our parents raised us, because no parents are perfect. One of the things this book has helped me to do is have a little, even though both my parents are gone now, is have a little more grace toward who my parents were. But it's also helped me to see how I'm responsible for some of the issues in my son's life. But I am not responsible at 39 years old for you getting your act together, kid, and getting over that anger that you still have because you don't like the way mom and dad did it. Time to grow up. That's just plain and simple how it is. Okay, Pam.
Doing... Deb, aren't you doing the yours first?
No.
Oh. First of all, I was a stepmom. I was not wicked. I just want to put that to rest there. When the last of our kids graduated, I left home they realized that we realized that we finally had a chance for us. It gave us a chance to just work on our relationship without all of the other external issues. Not all seasons in our lives was difficult. Some seasons was easier and great and better than others. But we always tried to make the effort of our family most important.
The thing that was so hard is that from the day we got married, we had three kids we were trying to deal with. Three very different kids, three very different ages, three very different personalities. And if I learned anything from our experience, it would have been that we should have taken more time for just us and figured out how they can just be on their own more, because we spent all of our emotional and financial and physical energy trying to love our kids, and it didn't leave enough time for us, and that was a huge mistake we made. And it took until we were on our own to really realize, wow, we got stuff we got to fix in our relationship. And then we realized, wow, we actually love each other. We actually are enjoying being in a relationship with each other. And we didn't really see all of that until after our kids were gone and we didn't have all that junk from being in a blended family. So I'm going to finish with this. I want to say a word about expectations. I don't care what kind of family you're in today in this room, what kind of family you grew up in, everyone has expectations. Everyone thinks, well, someday it'll be like this, or someday it'll be like that. I'm not saying expectations aren't okay to have. I just want to encourage you to be realistic, because how you think it's going to be probably isn't how it's going to be. Okay? So when we started this whole blended family thing, I had a horrible relationship with our daughter. I mean, it did not. She was strong-willed, and it's going to be my way no matter what, and there just wasn't really a way to break into that, and it didn't go well, and I made mistakes, and she said stuff, and then she moved out, and then she made a lot of bad choices and did a lot of dumb things, and we joke now about she's the cat with nine lives, because it's pretty amazing she's still alive. But here's what I want to say. That girl went through those hard knocks, and she got her act together, and today I'm really proud of her. Today she co-owns and runs a multi-million dollar business. This is the girl that wouldn't listen to anything, was just back-talk you, and the party girl and everything. Today I am so proud of who she is. So just because people are one way at one time doesn't mean that's the way they're always going to be. When we put our family trust together, there was no question we were going to ask her to be the executor of our family trust. She has it together. She's doing a great job. I love talking to her about her business and about deeper spiritual things, and I trust her. That was something I could have never said back then. So things change. Now, our son Scott, well, you know how people in the same family can be really, really, really different? We're really different. And for a long time, we just kind of agreed to get along and go along. He's a pretty low-key guy, and relationship. We have a great relationship. He's in the trades, so we talk about the trades together, and I have an awesome relationship, as does Pam, with our grandkids that are 12 and 14, and one of the most meaningful things for me is that together with them, we've written 6 books together, and it's been just an amazing project with my grandkids to do that. And I would never have expected that was going to come out of all of this. And then last, with my son, this is really hard for me to say because there's a lot of pain here. What started out as a deep and satisfying relationship with my son, an investment where I changed literally everything in my life for his sake, has been not just disappointing but deeply painful. He and his wife basically want nothing to do with us, or, for that matter, any of the rest of the family, extended family. If we want to see our granddaughters, we have to make an appointment at least 3 weeks in advance, and that's if the date works. And we can never just drop in. We can't never just pick up the phone and call. We have to have an appointment first. And most of the time, they don't get back to us. A lot. 5 of the last 6 times we've tried to get an appointment to see the girls, we've been told no. It's very painful. So some stuff goes on and on and on, and there aren't easy answers. And if you were hoping we were going to tell you how to have the perfect blended family, sorry. We're just telling you the real story of our life. It hasn't been great. We made lots of mistakes. We did a lot of things right, but that's kind of how it is. So we're going to open it up for questions. If any of you have questions for a few minutes, we'll be happy to answer questions about our experience. Ken, say real loud so everyone can hear you. I got a better idea. Hang on. Okay? All right. Sure.
I think for me, I would just respond in that I kind of got an easy way out because their dad died. So I didn't have to work through, he was alive and he was a part and involved or not involved and their issues, trying to juggle that whole thing. And because it kind of is age-based, mine were older, so it was almost like an adult level. I never talked to them about what their dad did or the issues or his behaviors. I would always find a little positive niche, like, when their son was just born, I would say something like, you know, your dad would have been proud of you, or your dad would have loved to have been here. So even though the truth might have been a little gray, but always trying to make it a positive thing, instead of bringing, if they wanted to bring up and talk about anything negative, I put that on them.
Yeah, I made a decision from the very beginning. I was never going to talk bad about his mom, ever. I mean, I shared our issues with you this morning, but I just don't ever talk bad about my son's mom. That was his relationship with her. Obviously, I worked real hard to reconcile that relationship for us to have become friends. I always ask about his mom. I also became friends with his brother and sister as they got older and grew up. They knew I cared about them almost like they were my own kids. And today I independently have conversations online most of the time with his sister and his brother. And my ex-wife knows that I talk to her kids, and she's good with that. And that comes from that decision to do everything you could to heal and learn from your mistakes, and the realization that I constantly, even reading and preparing for today, realize again the mistakes I made. It's so easy to blame other people for your stuff when it's really hard to own your own stuff. And so I think we just try to always be positive. We try to love and reach out, and we own when we make mistakes. My son knows one thing. He knows that his dad always says, I was wrong. I was wrong, I was wrong, I was wrong. Probably he knows, you know, now part of why he's so mad, I think, sometimes is he knows from my own confessing that I didn't always do it right. So, but that's, again, his stuff. He has to deal with that.
Next.
All right, other questions? Yeah, Paul. Nice and loud.
I will
take it. Okay.
I thought that you both have been incredibly vulnerable this morning. And I am so grateful for your transparency and sharing some very difficult things. Yeah, I think that's appropriate. So thank you. Like as you hurt up front, I hurt with you. So I thank you for sharing that. The thing I'd love to hear a little bit more about, if you're willing, is where did Jesus fit into all of this? Because I am sure
I'm so bad because I'm such an old guy with hearing aids now, I have to get closer to hear.
Okay, I'll do it right here. I want to hear about where Jesus fit into all of this pain. Because I respect you and your wife so much, and I want to hear that piece too.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't say this, but I guess I'll say it now. When my wife left, I was the pastor of our church, and I lost my job. I didn't just lose my wife. And for a while, I was angry at God. I was like, well, how did this happen? It's just like, it was really hard. But my place of dealing with all this, Paul, was just being vulnerable and just talking to God and just saying, I don't understand. I need you to help me understand. I went and got counseling on my own so that I could get some reflection back. That was when I started to heal my relationship with my parents. In counseling, I found out that a lot of issues I had, even with my wife, were really because of growing up with my parents. Why I recommend reading a book like this. And I've been working on those for years. So counseling was important. Being open and honest, having a couple of friends that I could talk to that would give me feedback and help me see what they thought I needed to do. Trying to grow in Christ, trying to be vulnerable, trying to confess my mistakes. An awful lot of it for a long time was me trying to figure out, how did this happen? Where did I go wrong? It's why I confessed the failure when we first talked this morning. I failed in my marriage. It wasn't all her fault. It was my fault and her fault. And so it was just, it was trying to keep being honest before God and keep crying out to God and keep praying and keep reading scripture and trying to figure out how to put it all back together. When I first met Pam, she had a red Pontiac Sunbird, and it was like the $500 car. And there's a point why I'm saying this. And it didn't even work with the key. You turned the whole ignition thing. That's how you turned the car on. It didn't even have a key. Anybody could have stole that car anytime. And
I love that car.
When I first went to Pam's house, there was like no food in the house, and there was no pictures. There was not one picture on the wall in the entire house. It was just like blank walls. And I mean, I had a good job, so I was okay, but man, I had no idea how bad she had really had it. And when I began to find out about all that bankruptcy stuff, I mean, she was like $80,000 in debt. And I was like, how could you possibly be that much in debt? And then I realized all this fraud he had committed and all these things that he had done. And how that comes back to your question, Paul, is it was incredibly humbling for me. I go, you don't even realize how good you have it. You think being a single dad has been hard? You have no challenges compared to what she's been through. And the pain that she was through and the things that she had gone through. And I can't tell you how many times early in our marriage I cried out to Jesus and I thought, we have all this conflict. I have no idea what to do with it. Not just me and her, but the whole family situation. And then when her parents wouldn't have anything to do with me for 8 years, because I was a loser just like the first husband, is like, you don't even know me. How can I be a loser? You've never taken any time to even get to know me. Well, because we just decided you are. What do you do with that? You just be patient and you pray and you hope that God will heal that and that you can move forward from there. Does that answer part of it at least?
Okay. I'll just tag on to that it's a journey. It's not a quick fix. It's not filing bankruptcy, okay, that's over, or this is over, or we got that taken. It was a long journey from where we were to where God had to, in his time, give a new piece of the puzzle. And now there's another piece of the puzzle. And so it was kind of like doing what we... doing what we needed to do, taking one step and then wait and taking another step, but not trying to make it where we had to figure it out, but just kind of wait that, you know, God was going to continually provide that next step and then we would go through that. It took a long time. It took years. So, you know, thinking it was going to all get fixed right away, And just learning that this is a journey.
And so. Telling yourself, I don't care how many times I get knocked down, I am getting back up no matter what. I will not stay down. Yeah. And the will to decide, no matter how tough it gets, I'm going to walk through this and come out the other side. That alone got me, at least, through a lot of things.
Next.
Anybody else before I turn it back to Mark?
John, this is a question for you specifically. What would you appreciate the most from your son if he began to try and start repairing the relationship between the two of you?
Of course, again with my hearing aid, sorry.
What would you appreciate the most from your son if he began to start repairing the relationship between the two of you?
I would like for us just to be able to talk. I'm more than willing to own my stuff with him.
What do you appreciate the most about him?
What would I appreciate the most about it if we started to reconcile?
About him.
What do I appreciate the most about him?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's an incredibly smart kid. He's super capable. He's a great dad. He loves those girls. I wish that he would let us have more time with them. That's a hurt for us. But I love my son and I see all kinds of good in him. I just wish we had a better relationship and I wish we could get back. I wish we could. Do you ever feel sometimes like you're walking along and you're dragging this weight behind you that you just can't get rid of? I would like to cut the baggage from my son and I and just say, couldn't we start fresh and try again? That's what I wish would happen. Whether that will happen, I don't know. I guess we'll go back to you now. Any other questions? I don't want to run too long.
Did that answer your question, kind
of? Is that what you were looking for, Alex, or not?
No. Let's try it again.
Yeah, I would just like him to want to spend time with me. Just for us to be able to spend time together. And I'm willing to do whatever is necessary. That relationship means so much to me that I'm willing to do whatever's necessary to repair it. And I don't care what it costs me, and I don't care how humbling I have to get. I'm willing to do whatever. I just wish we could take steps to move forward. Anybody else? All right, Mark has one more thing we're going to do this morning. Go ahead.